guys, I come to deliver a little bit of bad news. It looks like we're not going to be doing a show today because I sound like what I imagine a gremlin to sound like right now. I fear I might be coming down with a little bit of something, but that's not going to stop me from bringing you content. So here's an interview that we've done with a friend of ours here at PragerU by the name of Wilfred Riley. I hope you enjoy this interview. We go back and forth, go through his Twitter, try to explain some tweets, and have some fun talking about the current social issues that we're dealing with today, race being the one that we have the most fun with. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I'm gonna go rest up, work on feeling a little bit better, and hopefully I will see you tomorrow live to talk to you about a new issue. Can't wait.
Guys, we wanted to do a new segment on the show. It's called Explain That Tweet, where we bring you prolific Twitter users to bring up their tweets and see if we can get an explanation from them. You know, Twitter only allows a certain amount of characters. We want the thoughts to their full extent. Today, we have author of Hate Crime Hoaxes and Taboo, Wilfred Riley. He's also a presenter in many of our five-minute videos, one about what's wrong with the 1619 Project that you can check out by going to PragerU.com. Watch and five-minute videos. Wilfred, thank you for being on.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Fantastic. I'm going to just throw them at you, okay? We're going to just rapid fire these. Explain that tweet. Number one, reading one real history book about, say, slavery or white versus native wars can make you pretty woke. Reading 20, and in quotes, the Aztecs might spare plump children from the initial sacrifice, but... ellipses. It's likely to make you, if anything, pro-Western, but deeply depressed about humanity.
Yeah, I mean, the same effect occurs if you read... you know, the Bible or any of most of the great human texts. But yeah, what I was saying there is I think that very often when I talk to people that I would consider woke, they are people who are kind of backlashing from maybe that more jingoistic education you still sometimes get in Heartland America. I live in Kentucky. And they're saying things like, did you know, you know, the whites killed the Indians? And like, yes, I do know that. Like, they were the winners in that war. But I mean, I think if you actually take a book like Scalp Dance or Empire of the Summer Moon that looks at how the great native nations like the Comanches, the Aztecs, the Mohawk Iroquois, how they behaved, the many battles they won against the whites, you realize that a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Like, the reality is a lot more complex. I'll end this with one sentence. Women didn't get to vote in the USA or really anywhere else till 1920. Like, all of our ancestors were savages. Every adult man was expected to be a warrior in almost every black, Asian, native society until pretty recently. So when you discover that white Americans were very imperfect, it's very easy to stop there. But then you realize that everyone was very, very imperfect. I mean, you start asking questions like, where did all those slaves come from?
Right.
And you realize that that's why things like personal spirituality and honor code, so on, are so important. The wolf lives inside everyone. It's not a characteristic of one group of people.
Yeah. And I think it was something I used to be a former radical leftist. For those of you who don't know, I'm sure you guys all know this. Yeah. And slavery was the thing that I leaned on the most, you know, look at this transgression, and then come to find that no race has escaped the transgression of slavery for the most part. Why do you think the focus in America is just so strong on that particular point in history?
Well, I'm gonna steel man the other side's argument. Shout out to my guy Angel Eduardo from FAIR, who insists on everyone doing this during debates and so on. But I mean, the argument would be, well, because we live in America and the majority of atrocities in America were committed by whites and so forth. Of course, the majority of people are white as well. But I also think that when you dig a little deeper, you find that most people simply don't know that all human groups have behaved very equivalently throughout history. And by the way, this isn't a point of shame for members of quote-unquote minority groups. I mean, Genghis Khan and Mansa Musa and the leaders of the civilized Asian and African and so on empires are quite on par with many Europeans and, for example, Eastern Europe at the same time. But that included skill at brutality as well as skill at technology. So, I mean, I think that there's a, you can argue we should focus a little bit more on America, but I also think, just simply put in quantitative terms, if you ask American high school kids, you know, was slavery unique to the USA? You find that crazy percentages, like a quarter to half, say yes. So one answer is that a lot of people just don't know about a lot of this reality. They've read the one book. They haven't read the 20. And now I'm going to, because I mean, obviously, like, we both lean right now. There's another element that's not accidental here. The extent to which the radical kind of fringe left has taken over a lot of American discourse, if you're looking at media, if you're looking at secondary academia, higher education, is really pretty remarkable. If you look at any study, a university professor's last line, I mean, sociology, for example, is about 95% leftist, 5% conservative. So I think that's one reason there's so much more of a focus on the sins of Europe. It's not even just America, than on the sins of anywhere else. Genghis Khan killed 2% of the population of the world. I mean, this went on constantly for years.
Right.
But it is not focused on to the same extent.
Yeah, a fantastic. It's an amazing thing to sort of step outside of the scope of what you learn and the narrative and then sort of look out and see what other people don't see. Another one here. Explain this to me. I can't believe this requires explanation. The government of a state should not give needles and crack pipes to junkies.
Look, so when I said the wolf lives inside everyone, the reality is that there are probably very, very few ultimate rights and wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the true bases of moral systems when people are more primitive, there are, you know, Christians, the Ten Commandments, Buddhists, the Eightfold Way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always stuff like don't be a cannibal. Don't kill your neighbors.
Right.
I mean, so you can, sure, there's some baseline morality, but much beyond that, I think you kind of do determine what your honor code is and how you live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you, what am I saying here? If you want me to obey the laws, you have to at least pretend to take them seriously. And you have to at least pretend to try to enforce them. If you're not claiming these reflect some kind of ultimate deeper rule. So if your policy is drugs are bad and you're a country. And I'd agree, hard drugs are bad.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like playing during the weekends. You're smoking crack. Like, if that's the standard in almost every civilized country, you shouldn't give junkies the crack pipe.
Yep.
I mean, this is, people will make all these excuse-making arguments like, well, if we've got all the junkies in one facility, we can ensure that they smoke crack safely. But there's that sort of brutal realism in the back of every adult's mind. Like, if you've got all the junkies in one facility and they have drugs, you could arrest them and send them to rehab.
Mm.
Like, there seems to be no situation where giving them crack pipes is the ideal solution. One other thing, as a black man, I find it incredibly annoying that there's this constant pitch of we woke whites are the people that really want to help the community.
Right.
But it's always stuff like this. It's not always. There's just some good job stuff in Build Back Better.
Sure.
But most of the time, it strikes me that it's more stuff like this than like we're actually going to build a factory in an African-American community, or for that matter, a poor white neighborhood, or we're going to move there.
Yep.
Like, if you're a teacher, live in your district. It's never that. It's always like we notice whites are smoking, you know, from some cleaner crack pipes.
Right.
And, you know, your urban junkie might have to smoke from the car antenna. So we're going to fix that. That's not something that we need to fix. Last thing, because. But I mean, like, even the whole like powder crack cocaine disparity, like people say if you sell an ounce of crack, you're five times the sentence you get for selling an ounce of powder.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if the people we really need to be focusing on in hood communities are the people moving ounces of crack. That's the least sympathetic people imaginable. Like, of all the racist disparities that exist, why this one?
Right. In honor of Black Lives Matter, let's give out clean crack pipes. Let's decriminalize shoplifting. And I don't know. Let's just allow people to do whatever they want because disparate impact.
Well, I think, like, I grew up in a big city, and I was, when I mentioned I was a radical, like, I was an organizer for Occupy for a while. This is back, like, 2010. This is, like, real. People fighting the police.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with the Guy Fawkes masks on and, like, swords over their back. And it struck me that, I'll censor this because it's a family audience, but that bleep didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, you started seeing the stuff you see with BLM 10, 15 years later. Like, people were giving us millions of dollars, and people were taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing is a loaded phrase that my lawyers advised me not to use, but it's just like the bank account for Occupy Chicago, I think, is still frozen.
Yeah.
You know, so it's fun to hook up outdoors and scrap with the police, but none of this seemed to be doing anything for, in that case, I guess, student communities, working class communities of all colors.
Right.
And BLM seems to have had the same effect on black communities, which is to say not much. But the point I was making is actually a slightly different one.
Mm.
One of the things you noticed with Occupy was that a lot of, like, woke college girls, bluntly, would come down to the radical zone to kind of play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were all these fun people there, and they had weapons, and you might hang out with them for a night, then you'd leave. This was sort of this game. And I noticed there's the same attitude toward the hood. Like, you hear this incredibly patronizing stuff, like, well, we know some of you have to work as sex workers, but while you do, you will be safe, and your crack will be hot. Why don't you try to help people not work as prostitutes and smoke crack?
Right.
I think would be a very good starting point. Why don't treat people as fellow human brothers, I think is a good baseline idea.
Yeah, it's almost like, oh, well, we've accepted that this is the reality for people of color.
What's
so why
do
not we
down there?
Yeah, why not facilitate it for them? amazing.
Now, actually, what you just said there, it's worth thinking about that in detail. Obviously, mm-hmm. you can choose to be a sex worker. I'm pretty pro-sex. I'm not going to discuss that in detail, unlike sure. the current government official.
Yep, the kinks.
Keep that to yourself. I favor considerable entertaining decadence with someone you like indoors.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, but with all that aside, like, consider that sentence, though. Like, sure, you can consensually choose to be a sex worker, but at a broad sure. systemic level, people are saying, we expect you to be crack-smoking whores. That's the absolute norm in the black community, yeah. and we're going to help you with that. Why?
Yeah.
Like, take your crack pipes back home.
And they're the ones who are going to end racism.
Yeah, it's all these starting assumptions. Like, the starting assumption behind cutting academic standards, of course, is that blacks, and by the way, you'd have to say to even greater extent, Hispanics and natives in a lot of situations,
right.
but are just academically incapable. And mm-hmm. it's just a polite way of saying them people don't even speak the language.
Yep.
You know, like what you want to do is, you know, do a year of bilingual education, but then take students in poor Hispanic areas and put them in classrooms, everybody else, and, you know, make them learn math, make it intensive. The goal is to get people to know things,
sure.
not to pretend that knowing things doesn't matter and admit people into your elite universities regardless of whether or not they know things.
It's just wild that has to be verbalized.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Crazy. It is pretty crazy. Speaking of crazy, here's your next tweet. Comparing the A, reality of, and B, mainstream media coverage of the, quote, freedom convoy, as versus the Black Lives Matter protests and riots is a remarkably eye-opening experience, even for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a right-leaning writer, so I mean, I expected there to be some BS from the media, but I mean, mm-hmm. the coverage of the Freedom Convoy. Now, I will say, first of all, I don't think like mass public demonstrations generally work all that well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that was so effective about the Reverend King, for example, is that he would walk everybody across the bridge,
mm-hmm.
and you would see all these potential fighting men from like HBCU football teams not fighting,
right.
and he would make the point, why can't we walk across this bridge on any day? I mean, people were doing things like sitting down at lunch counters with their girlfriends in a suit and quietly ordering a banana split.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that was what's so effective. It's this sort of normal behavior contrasted with the frenzy of the people responding to you.
Right.
But in terms of like the classic like left and right fight in the streets type of demonstration, I'm not sure that accomplishes much of anything. So the Freedom Convoy by about day three would have started to annoy me if I were living in Ottawa. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like just the honking starts at 7 a.m. and stops at 8 p.m., apparently. But with that said, the treatment of the truckers, which are being described as like a radical, disruptive
right.
force, violent.
Yeah.
yeah. The police are going and stealing their gasoline.
Mm.
The Prime Minister of Canada's in hiding. He's lying about having COVID. I mean, at some point he may have, but this has been going on for like a week plus. I think we could start to say, like, right. where's that negative test, Justin?
Right.
You know, all this stuff they're talking about. That has not been confirmed. But they're talking about, you know, this is a hate crime. People are threatening $100,000 sanctions against anyone involved. The treatment of that as versus the actual BLM protest that ended up in many cases degenerating into riots
mm-hmm.
is pretty remarkable. I mean, like the Minneapolis protest, just to give one example, set an active police station on fire with the police in it.
Right.
And the description of events like this was almost invariably fiery, but mostly peaceful, was what CNN led with.
Sure.
I want to clarify, this isn't mostly a riot. Contrast that with the depiction of like the Sikh guy in his truck honking the horn.
Right, right. They put the cardboard sign on the statue and all of a sudden that's vandalism and they've defaced this statue.
That was the most ridiculous thing. Like there are a yeah. lot of guys on the left, I argue with, like Matsukita, that were very passionately saying like, they defaced the statue of the unknown soldier. And I, like, the thing is, I think they believe it. Like, these guys are left-wing but patriotic enough.
Right.
But it was like, bro, did you ever turn on any right-leading media during the BLM riots? Like,
right.
They were cutting the heads off statues of Frederick Douglass and stuff like this. They didn't even know who the people in the statues were.
But mostly peaceful.
Yeah. But, like, one of the statues that was defaced during the BLM fighting was the statue of the 54th Massachusetts, which is an all-black regiment that helped conquer the South. And when people were asked about it off the record, the explanation seemed to be, we didn't know those were black soldiers. And there are a lot of questions that I have about that. But anyway, like contrasting that with like they put the Canadian flag on the Canadian soldier statue. This is now the worst we've ever seen.
Right. Horrifying.
Without excusing any rioting on either side. Of course, you're seeing the same thing with January 6th. Like people died during a riot. And this is the most despicable. The total death toll from the BLM rioting, I think, was 50. The Federalist headed at 35 in August of 2020. Mm-hmm. So without exaggerating this, I mean, the panic and level of anger is new, let's say.
Yep. Yep. So this leads me to my next question for you. This is actually a question that you posed on Twitter.
Right.
What's your favorite example of absurdly racist or un-PC behavior by people who are currently annoyingly woke? I think my best answer for this is that most recent Showtime special, I'm sure you've seen that video. Everything's gonna be all white.
Yeah. Go on. Sorry. Actually, I feel I've been doing most of the talking.
I just feel like that was just the most blatantly racist thing. And so overtly, it's like the what we've been trying to hide for so long. We're now comfortable with saying out loud and to make an entire docuseries out of it and then post it so proudly and so confidently is just amazingly. So that's my answer.
Well, this is actually something. If you look at kind of the Ibram Kendi left, like something they say very confidently is that the solution to discrimination in the past is discrimination now.
Yep.
So if you see a gap that you think is due potentially like 50% to what was often in the North, implicit discrimination in the past, the solution to that is open, explicit discrimination today.
Right.
So like I actually would agree that like there, for example, there are audit studies that find that there's maybe a 7% level of discrimination against black names in hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And again, even there, there's a response. Like the black names chosen are always things like Shaniqua.
Right.
By, again, sort of like good thinking white activists. And they're always contrasted with names like Tim.
Yeah.
And you always have to wonder how, like, Malcolm would do as versus, like, Bubba.
Right,
but at any rate, nonetheless, there obviously is measurable racism. But it's always this subtle stuff, and it's being responded to with just, like, the most explicit offensive content imaginable. So, like, yeah, you're talking about the Showtime special where people are saying things like, yeah, all whites should still feel guilty about slavery. Or this content isn't for white people. Yeah, it's called Everything's Gonna Be All White. That one's right up there. I think the crack pipe thing would be probably the winner for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to get past
strong
the crack pipe.
Strong argument.
But another tough one. But I mean, another one would have to be like Justin Trudeau. One of the things I said on Twitter was that Justin Trudeau must be master of disguise from like the old A-Team show or from Kingsman.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many pictures of him in like full-on Hindu traditional garb or like wearing like a war bonnet with like the two eagle feathers for when you've killed your enemies. Like
it's like he almost wanted to get it out of his system before he rose to power.
Well, but I mean, like, so the point of like the probably the most racist woke thing I've seen is him wearing blackface like four times just for no
not
reason.
Not once.
There was like for situations when he didn't have to. Like there was an Arabian Nights party that Trudeau went to where he painted his entire body black, like his hands were black and so on. And one of the things you notice if you look at the pictures is that there are a bunch of other people there. But because Arabs are Caucasian, no one else chose to paint themselves in blackface.
Right.
People just wore like dark makeup or nothing. They wore like a hijab. So Trudeau, just of his own devices, was like, I'm going to paint myself black because I want to.
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't the first time. That to me has to be one of the most obviously racist. And this is
there.
The thing is, it's entirely situational, right? Like, one of the things I don't want to keep dragging in other random BS I've said on Twitter.
No, please do. Please do.
But, like, one of the things I said is, like, I get cancel culture. I get you should try to be a gentleman. And I actually don't get cancel culture at all, actually, so I'll omit that one. But, like, I pointed out that if you look at some of the things you're supposed to be canceled for, like, there are lists of these in university speech codes, but they're all, like, one of them is using racial insults ever. One of them is telling any ethnic joke. One of them is sex while drunk. There were like a whole bunch of these things, like while video gaming, there's no, or playing sports, there's no excuse for using slurs.
Mm.
Like, can I curse on here?
Go for it.
But like one was just bitch, for example. And it was like the percentage of men that have done that. I don't know about like the women's game or whatever, but it's about 100. So who gets canceled is very situational. Like it's Joe Rogan, but it's not Howard Stern.
Exactly.
And the point is, like, the most racist thing I've seen from kind of the woke black would be Justin Trudeau repeatedly wearing blackface just for the hell of it.
Mm-hmm.
But his cancellation risk is extremely low.
Oh, yeah, because they know he's going to continue to support the narrative going forward. So there's no reason to call about his cancellation now.
Yeah.
You brought up Joe Rogan, which leads me to your next tweet here. My version of what Rogan said would be, quote, I may personally regret having said certain terms like the N-word in the context of quoting others, but the people attacking me are totally disingenuous and dishonest, and I have no plans to apologize to the internet, continue watching or not, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first of all, I think it's extraordinarily obvious that Joe Rogan's not a racist. I think it's extraordinarily obvious that most people in integrated kind of up middle class urban culture aren't racist. Mm-hmm. Like, racist has to have an actual meaning. Like, if you ask someone, would you have sex with someone of a different race and then consider proposing to them for marriage? And the person was like, yes, you're probably not a racist.
Right.
Are three or more of your closest 10 friends, say, black if you're white or white if you're black? Anyone who says yes isn't a bigot in any traditional sense. It's actually a very coherent response to you're a racist to say, no, all my friends are black.
Sure.
I've never understood that's something we're supposed to mock. There's, again, that upper class, working class disconnect there. But basically with the Joe Rogan thing, like, you know, I disapprove of the use of most slurs, just asked if you were comfortable even one on the air, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But, like, none of these cancellations around the use of the N-word have involved people calling someone else a racial slur.
Glad you said it.
And this is so important here, because what we're doing is, all of this is what I call cry bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just pretense. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people might be genuinely offended if they personally were insulted in, like, a racial or sexual manner. I think that would be understandable. But what you're talking about is teachers, like beloved old teachers being drummed out of school, generally to make room for newer, more fashionable teachers because they read Huck Finn out loud. Mm-hmm. And nobody's actually offended by that. This stuff is being used in a series of power games between racial groups and political parties. Like the Joe Rogan thing, what they have is over, what, like 14 years, there's a clip of him saying the N-word like 20 times strung together from him, like, interviewing Randall Kennedy and stuff like that. Like, there's no offensive use of this, so on down the line. So we're talking sympathetic magic here. Like, the idea is that if you say a word that was once used to insult people, to say, here we don't use insulting terms, you are canceled because you've used an insulting term. It's just the stupidest thing in the world. Like, the dumbest example of this was actually Papa John. From Papa John's Pizza.
I remember this controversy.
Yeah, and it's weird because now he's getting a lot of love in the black community because people know what happened. Like, originally it was just like he said the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, like, this blue-collar Italian guy who employed a lot of African-Americans was talking, and he said, you know, when I was in starting off in this business, and I'm like, I'll keep saying the N-word as a joke, but I'm not going to, like, say all of these as letters. You know, we used to say terms like WAP or Nick, you know. And slurs for every, I'm not going to insult 15 ethnic groups either, so you got to balance it.
Just to get all of them.
Jews! But anyway, like, but he was like, slurs used to be used, one of them was the N-word, we don't say those anymore, and I don't tolerate that as a businessman. You might correct, like, one or two words I just said. But for that, because he said, like, three of the terms, he was canceled. That's the stupidest stuff in the world. This is the diversity training where the overall boss is willing to come talk to you, and he says, we don't do this anymore, and so he gets fired. And you have to wonder, like, was the next CEO, like, the former VP of diversity? Like, there's never a situation where someone, for sincere non-business reasons, does this crap.
Right, and I don't know if you've seen this video, but it's a guy going down on Venice Beach and interviewing a bunch of people about Joe Rogan and his use of the N-word. And of course, all the woke whites say, absolutely cancel him. How dare he use that word? And then he goes up to all these black people and they're like, I don't care. I don't give a F that he said this. And Joe Rogan's actually my N-word.
Yeah. Like, that's funny.
It's amazing the juxtaposition between those two things.
Yeah, this is actually something, like, I grew up in the hood, basically. I grew up in East Aurora, which is, and by the way, the hood is very multicolored. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like 50% of the people, 49% of people on welfare are white.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, when there are exceptions, like, you can see, if you're in the Marcy projects, that's mostly black.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in the projects in Lexington, it looks like United Colors of Bennington. I mean, it's Bennington, whatever, I don't play soccer. But, like, it's just, so... But I mean, in that entire diverse, like, in my entire diverse upbringing, watching people cheer for Jordan and Bird and so on, I never saw people make some of these arguments. I never saw people argue that the North in the USA in the 90s was extraordinarily racist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by this point, Colin Powell was the Secretary of State. I think my high school had integrated in 1932 or something like that. This isn't to say there were no restrictive covenants on one side or the other.
Sure.
Your life was perfect. But I mean, like, the extent to which when you get into upper middle class life and you hear the level of sensitivity that goes on, it can be shocking, is really remarkable. And this is the real point. The extent to which this small cadre of people has, again, infiltrated discourse, like we talked about in 95 to 5 in sociology and academia, one of the largest fields. It's pretty crazy. So you have, like, with things like, can men get pregnant? If you get on Google and you search, can men get pregnant? Nothing about transgender, no softening language, just can men get pregnant? Look at the first five hits.
Right.
The influence of this tiny fringe of people in tech, in discourse, in business now is absolutely remarkable. And that's what's happening to Joe Rogan. The thing is that, getting back on track, Joe Rogan has $100 million in the bank account from his last contract.
Right.
Rumble's offered him $100 million more if he wants to break that contract to take a certain element of a loss. So I don't think he has anything to worry about.
No, not at all.
You know, many people do.
And you just perfectly segued into your last tweet here.
Boom.
Radical idea. Why don't we unify and utterly wipe out, intellectually, with humor, the small fringe left that has infiltrated much of media and academia? Why don't we?
I think people are starting to. Like, I mean, just even walking through, like, the Prager complex here, I mean, it's a 2-3-story building. And one of the things that's notable is that everyone's just normal. I mean, I think the stereo, like, I assume everyone can see all of us, but, like, you're an African-American woman with some solid ain't going on.
Thank you.
Caucasian, obviously urban.
Holding
guy.
It down for the white guys over here.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, obviously from a city. Like, you see, they got the doll with the dreads on it over here. I mean, like, it's right. Just, and like going through the building, I've noticed this in a lot of different environments. I mean, from the Daily Caller to black media that's a little heterodox. Like, it just looks like you'd expect the Daily Beast to look.
Right.
Like, I think the stereotype from anyone on the modern dominant sort of scent left would be that at least the right wing examples I've just given, if you walked in here, it'd be a bunch of Amish people and priests and, you know, women sitting around in their Handmaid's Tale outfits.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But I mean, I think in reality, normal citizens are starting to backlash to this. I mean, their entire colleges, the University of Austin's currently being established, that are kind of forming up to fight these nonsensical ideas. I mean, just as a blatant plug, I'm a member of a couple of the groups involved. Like 1776 Unites is the black business and social science community, or at least the right half of it, or whatever percentage, response to the 1619 Project. And fantastic. I think a lot of the comments from Bob Woodson and Glenn Lowry, Shelby Steele, Coleman Hughes, a lot of the people involved with that, is a lot of this stuff kind of makes us look dumb. Like, if people argue that the only cause of, like, any gap in performance is either racism or genes, which you hear pretty often, a lot of things.
Right.
Like, when I mentioned Hispanics were struggling academically, often to at least the same extent as blacks, there's a factor there is speaking primarily Spanish. So the reality is that life is complicated, and these sort of explanations are almost worthless. So 1776 is one example of a group responding. AFAIR, the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, which Beyond Bartnick, Barry Weiss, again, Glenn Lowry, Megyn Kelly, a bunch of other people set up, is interesting in that it responds to both traditional allegations of racism. We'd certainly get involved if a school was, like, segregating and abusing black kids, 100%. But we also respond to allegations of woke racism, essentially. Like, we would 100% respond if a school was segregating and abusing white kids.
Sure.
Or doing stuff like privilege walking, where you have 8- and 9-year-old kids announcing that they're bisexual or saying whether or not their children are divorced. So, I mean, I think you're starting to see these massive organizations as people get tired of this. The reality is that everyone sort of knows the emperor has no clothes. Like, I, on Twitter, and, like, I obviously have kind of a center-right audience, but, again, very urban, mostly people from Chicago and Louisville, probably 50-50 ethnically. Actually, I don't know about that. A lot of low-key whites, probably.
So, there might be a few sprinkled in there.
No, but I mean, like, but there's nothing wrong with that. Even the idea that your audience has to reflect your countrymen in some exact proportion
ridiculous.
Is extraordinarily bizarre.
Yes, it is.
Like, white guys I've played sports with will comment on some of the things, or was on teams at the high school, will comment on some of the things that I say, and people will respond like, what do you know about that neighborhood? And they'll sort of say, well, I live there. What do you know about it? I mean, anyway, but all the blither aside, basically, I think that people are starting to, so the focus here, though. Diverse audience, I actually asked, do you believe, with no qualifiers, that men can get pregnant? Just as a joke, just seeing how the polling response is working. It was like a Twitter poll via SurveyMonkey. And it was like 99% no, 1% yes. So I think nobody actually believes this stuff. What you have is a problem where a lot of the upper middle class and a lot of public spaces in a city make it very uncomfortable to say you don't believe it. But just like looking around the rooms here, or looking around my social media and my group of friends, the reality is that we're all kind of being bamboozled because no one thinks this stuff is true.
Right.
Like, a lot of the people that are speaking out, like Glenn Greenwald, Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss, Jimmy Dore, are actually sort of heterodox liberals that are like, we want to wipe these people off the map so we can go back to fighting with the conservatives about birth control and so on.
Right,
like,
right.
Taxes and abortion, like real issues, not this crap, like how many sexes are there?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that there's almost a 100% backlash to this. You're going to start seeing very soon.
Oh, amazing. That's a very hopeful message for the audience. Yeah. Guys, take that in. So it sounds maybe you're short-term pessimist as far as that small fringe people, but long-term optimist?
Yeah, I mean, so both the left and the right in the past have made mistakes, and it depends even on what you mean by left and right. Like, I wouldn't want a king, for example, which right. is the ultimate extension, or the actual Handmaid's Tale society, or for that matter, modern Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
The Indonesian army, and again, don't want to be crude, but the Indonesian army, civilized, probably second world nation, we spar with them on trade, recently got rid of mandatory virginity for troops. I imagine this is only enforceable for women, but you know, that's all that matters.
I knew no such thing.
No,
wow.
I mean, so like there are things yeah. on the right globally, as someone who you grew up in the bosom of Holy Mother Church, that yep. you probably would not want to implement. But I mean, I think that, oh, the question was short-term pessimism, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I tend to ramble. So like,
no, that's totally fine.
Okay, but basically, the point of this ramble, though, is I think in recent history in the United States, most of the social evils have come from the left, and they've done an incredibly good cosmetic job of disguising this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I obviously support the black civil rights movement during the 1960s, which mm-hmm. is not an exclusively left-wing movement,
mm-hmm.
if you look at how Republicans voted on the Civil Rights Act and so on. But almost everything else, from the discovery of hard drugs and their social popularization to the end of the sexual revolution to the later waves of feminism to like environmentalism with no nukes, like all of this stuff was mostly just complete BS. The first round of police defunding and community policing, we saw crime increase about 500% between 1963 and 1993. I grew up in early 90s Chicago, and it really was like that one movie, Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd get on the train with your skateboard and watch people walk on and start painting graffiti on the windows.
Right.
So, like, all of that stuff, I feel, has been a result of certain specific modern leftist policies. And that's not unintentional. I mean, if you read books like Ron Radash's Commies, for example, there really was a very concerted effort. This is not a conspiracy theory. There are people who have documented it in full. To funnel the former 60s radicals, the Weathermen and so on, into specifically academia, mm-hmm. the NGO sector, places where they could continue, quote unquote, the revolution by different means. And I think that's how we got this sort of Maoist 3% that mm-hmm. so dramatically influences society. But yeah, I think long term, that's something that can't continue. I don't think people are going to allow it. And I think mm-hmm. that one of the things that is making it less functional is just the availability of other platforms like Substack, Local,
right.
YouTube, so on. Like, a lot of the people on YouTube, like gothics, if we're talking about like heterodox black women, are just obviously like really high IQ funny people that have a good computer in their room and they've started talking about things. But people are starting to ask, why do the people in academia with the qualifications sound so much stupider than this person sitting on their skateboard in Detroit?
Right.
And it's a valid question. And the answer is because they are.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's a system that can endure very long.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I also don't think our audience has ever gotten so much information in such a short period of time. You might be one of the top guests we've ever had on the show.
Boom. That's what I like to hear.
You've killed it. You've crushed
it. Number one, not one of them. Obviously the best all time ever.
You just might be. Maybe we'll have the audience vote in a poll down below as you guys are watching this.
I'll share it on Twitter.
That's fantastic. You just might win. I have a strong feeling. Wilfred, how can people support you other than following you on Twitter?
Well, I'm always tempted to joke and say if they could give me money. The one time I actually said that, people started giving me money. And, like, I'm actually pretty financially stable. So for ethical reasons, it became kind of a pain in the ass where I had to, like, give the money to charities and so on. So anyway.
Okay, so maybe don't. But it's going to go to charity.
Yeah, I mean, so you can give me money if you want to. But the way to follow me, like, I'm actually extremely wired in. I actually used to run a small social media company, but I'm Wilfred Riley. It's WILFREDREILLY. And if you just search that name, you'll find my Twitter, Facebook, me on the university website for KSU, awesome. All that stuff.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for watching. Wilfred, thank you for being here.
Thank you.